Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to be talking about the Arduino, that cool little hardware platform that you can put your own cool software on and make it gadgets. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for TWiT's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make TWiT even better. And thanks for your continued support.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb, episode 422, recorded February 21st, 2017, Arduino Update. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by GoCD, an on-premise, open-source continuous delivery server by ThoughtWorks. GoCD gives you complete control of and visibility into your deployments across multiple teams. To learn more about GoCD, visit gocd.io/twit for a free download. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and unaware of it, projects that many, many millions of people around the world are taking advantage of and using and sharing with, like today's project, but we'll get to that in a second. Projects you may not have ever heard of, but now want to go download and play with right after the show. This may actually be something for today's show as well. Let's go ahead and bring on my co-host, Aaron Newcomb. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Randall. Good to be here.
And you have a new background. Where are you speaking to us from?
Yeah, so I'm at my office, my new office at New Relic, the company I joined last week, my first week. So I wasn't in the queue in enough time to get a good conference room. So maybe next time I'm on, I can get, we have a great view here at the office. So next time we'll try to get a better conference room. This is the only one that was available, and it's kind of goofy. It's gray and has this weird paneling stuff. It's supposed to be hip and trendy. I don't know. It's probably my least favorite room. So,
cool. And I am, of course, speaking to y'all from my brother's place up in Lacey, Washington. Hopefully there are no deer here today. That was so distracting a few weeks ago. I saw a deer right out the window, and I went, okay, I can't see it. No deer today. But today we have a really, really cool project, probably well known if you're in the open hardware community, called Arduino. Arduino's been around for a really long time. It's actually a collection of different sizes of platforms and hardware and the whole interactive development environment that goes with that. And we even had Arduino on a previous show way back in 2009, way back when I was merely the co-host of this show and Leo Laporte himself was in charge of the show and doing all the cool stuff there. We had we mispronounce this, Massimo Bonzi, who is one of the co-founders of Arduino, on chatting about it at that time, talking about everything that was going on there. I went back and listened to that show just to make sure that I could get up to date on what I thought this was about. But that's up to date as of 2009. It's 2017 already. Almost said 16, you know. Aaron, I understand you have at least a little experience with the Arduino. You want to sort of fill us in, give us the overview, but don't answer anything that we're likely to ask the guest.
That was a long time ago. I mean, that was kind of in the very beginning that initial interview took place. Of course, I use Arduino on a nearly daily basis. And we use it at the Makerspace. I found it all the time. We're always doing classes. Arduino is a great platform for beginners to pick up because they don't necessarily have to worry about all the other trappings that surround something like a Raspberry Pi, that being a full-fledged computer. This is a microprocessor system. Or a microcontroller system, whichever way you want to call it. But so it's great. You just have an IDE. You can do a few simple commands, and people can learn to turn an LED light on or something like that, and they don't have to worry about, oh, the Ethernet's not working or my SD card is corrupted or anything like that because it's all local on the system. So, yeah, I'm a huge fan of Arduino. I use it all the time, and I'm excited to get to some of the questions. But I don't want to talk forever here. We want to bring on our guests.
Well, one of the things that I found really cool about it is that It's like, you know, I do everything with software. So that's my bent. I'm not much of a hardware guy. But it's really cool, like, to do a really nice web animation or web display or interaction stuff. And some of that doesn't translate well for people because they go, well, that's just a computer program. That doesn't require any smarts. But when you can toggle an LED based on whether the box is held horizontally or vertically, and all of a sudden it's like, well, how's that working out? How does it know whether it's horizontal or vertical? And how does it know how to turn the LED on and off? That, I think, is really a lot more attention grabbing, especially for young students that are getting into programming, getting into perhaps even hardware design, software design, things like that. So I really like that the Arduino has been around for a while. Any further comments before we bring on our guest in a second?
No, I would echo that as well. I mean, the nice thing, and we'll probably get into this a little bit, I talked about the difference between Raspberry Pi and Arduino. But the nice thing about the Arduino is, since it is just a microcontroller, you can do things pretty much in real time. So if you need to write an application that's doing, like you say, using an accelerometer, and you need it to be up to the microsecond accurate, you know, in terms of timing, it's easy to do that on the Arduino. It's difficult to do that on the Raspberry Pi because it's a different type of architecture. And usually what we find in the makerspace is that people come to us having some background in Arduino now, since Arduino is the older platform. People come and say, well, I'm used to Arduino, but I want to try something on the Raspberry Pi. And it takes a little bit of coaching to tell them, hey, this is a different animal. You need to take a different, quite a bit more involved in terms of learning how to write, how to use a Raspberry Pi versus using the Arduino. So.
And we're going to bring our guest on in just a minute. In fact, I haven't even mentioned her name yet, Kathy Giori, and I probably mispronounced that, so she can correct me when we bring her back on. But she's the Arduino's U.S. Business Operations Manager. So she's going to be talking a lot about the Arduino, particularly from a U.S. point of view. But it is a worldwide phenomenon and been very cool. But before we bring her on, I do have a very important message. Because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by GoCD. GoCD is the on-premise, open-source, continuous delivery server created by ThoughtWorks. With GoCD's comprehensive pipeline modeling, you can model complex workflows across multiple teams with ease. GoCD can easily configure dependencies for fast feedback and on-demand deployment with its parallel and sequential execution. Its fan-in, fan-out dependency management always does the right thing, avoiding spurious builds. The value stream map lets you track a change from commit to deploy at a glance. GoCD's real power is in the visibility it provides over your end-to-end workflow. You get complete control of and visibility into all your deployments across the organization. GoCD offers complete customization for your software's individual needs. GoCD will perform tests written in most languages or frameworks. Their test reporting will tell you exactly which change set and on what platform the test started breaking. You can compare content across any two arbitrary builds, making it invaluable when troubleshooting a broken pipeline. GoCD supports auditable deployment and can delegate the configuration of pipelines to users without full-blown admin privileges. GoCD has extension points for which the plugins can be created, and numerous plugins are available, or you can write your own. So say goodbye to deployment panic and hello to consistent, predictable deliveries. To learn more about GoCD and for a free download, visit gocd.io/twit. That's gocd.io/twit. Commercial support and enterprise add-ons, including disaster recovery, are also available. And we thank GoCD for their support of Floss Weekly. Let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Kathy Giori. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Great. And did I pronounce your last name right?
Yep, Giori. You got it.
Awesome. Soft G. I was going to know, is it going to be a soft G or a hard G? I can't tell, but I will just try the soft G and see if that works out. So, tell us, give us the 30,000-foot view. Where did Arduino come from, and what problem is it solving?
Well, it's interesting that it all got started. If you step back to how it all got started, a little lesser-known guy named Hernando Barragan was a design student in Italy at an Italian design institute, and he was frustrated with the difficulty of being able to allow students to interact with the real world, you know, doing lighting or sound control or just sensing the real world. And he found, you know, that microcontrollers could do the job, but they were really difficult to work with. So he took on, as part of his master's thesis, prototyping a board and some software. That's where it gets started. And he selected an Atmel chip that had an open tool chain so that he could compile the code. It was an 8-bit MCU microcontroller. And he designed a few prototype boards with it, and then they used it in the classes and found it was wildly successful. Because what he did also, he took this processing, this IDE, another open source creation of another professor, and he created his own abstraction layer called wiring. And this wiring layer was the thing that, you know, digital write to pin 10 high or low, analog read this voltage off pin 3. He abstracted away all the complexity of the deep, you know, heavy engineering side of it, and allowed these design institutes to start, students to start controlling and interacting with the real world with microcontrollers. He took away the complexity. And now, you know, it's being fully open source on the software side as well as the hardware. It makes programming of these real-time microcontrollers accessible to kids and adults alike. And there are, you know, more opportunities to do advanced software as well. So I think because it was open hardware, affordable, you know, and caught on, now it was picked up and used in like 3D printers, CNC machines, X-carve machines, robots, industrial automation. Like Aaron said, the real-time control is really the key of the microcontroller. And you mentioned in 2009 you had Massimo Bonzi. He was one of Hernando's advisors at the time. And then there was an engineer, Gianluca, who had prototyped some of the early boards that Hernando designed, and a few others from education formed the team to make the Arduino products that's grown now into this very large community. So now, even though, you know, Arduino, the brand is big, Arduino compatible boards, because it's open hardware and software, are now that industry, and that community is even much larger than the Arduino manufactured boards themselves. And there are a lot of other software options too.
So just to describe for people who aren't familiar with small hardware like this, you're talking about a microcontroller. So that's not quite the power of, say, a typical, you know, whatever is currently in most laptops and stuff these days, AMD chips and Intel chips and stuff. It's a much smaller thing, requires a lot less power requirements, but also has a lot less capability. How would you distinguish the capability of a microcontroller from, say, a typical desktop or laptop computer?
Yeah, and that's often a question of what's the difference between Arduino and Raspberry Pi. They're both big brands with open source, but like Aaron said, they're quite different. The microcontroller, limited memory, 8-bit was the early Arduino Uno. Now there's more popular are 32-bit designs, but still you're talking about a small form factor, small footprint, small power, but real-time control. You can talk to it bare metal, you know, just straight logic to the silicon and control and interact with the real world. A microprocessor like the Raspberry Pi running Linux or your laptop or all these other things, those are more general purpose processors with other IOs for keyboards and mice and video displays and so forth. So there's a lot more going on with that silicon, but software is written at an abstract layer, you know, a high level operating system, and that means you're writing applications that aren't real time, and you're not directly talking to the hardware out of the chip. You're writing stuff that's being processed abstractly. I don't know if that's a good way to say it, but
that makes sense. That makes sense. And so, what is your role with the Arduino? Well, I guess the whole ecosystem. I mean, it's big, as you said. So, what's your role with that?
Well, so I got involved because I'm a huge fan of open source. I was actually in the silicon industry on the microprocessor side, Qualcomm and Qualcomm Atheros and Wi-Fi routers. And there are a few Arduino boards now, two of them, Arduino Yun and Tien, that have a Linux microprocessor in addition to the microcontroller. So we're expanding into like Internet of Things type projects so that you can have Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, Ethernet. You can have different forms of RF communications and combine that with the command and control of the microcontroller. And so my role has been on partnership levels. We want to expand the amount of hardware that can be supported, and also on the education side. So now we want to expand the number and types of workshops that people can use. So we're offering some kits that are more education oriented, and I could go into a lot of product side enhancements on the hardware side. I'm not really responsible for them, but I'm responsible for helping promote them. and get them out there. So that's, we're a small company. I wear a lot of hats. It's hard to describe everything, but
Hey, Kathy, can you go over just what the, so for people that aren't familiar with Arduino, I mean, as you mentioned, there are a number of boards available out there, from the Uno to the Nano, the Mini Pro, the Yoon. I mean, can you kind of give an, I guess, a brief overview of the differences in the boards themselves? Not too detailed, but maybe pick like three or four of the most popular ones and kind of break out for people what the main differences are.
Yeah, so the Arduino Uno is the classic, and there's a starter kit with it, and it's a specific form factor that allows what are called shields. So you can put a shield on top that could be, it could be a communication shield, it could be a motor shield, it could be a shield with a bunch of sensors. So you can expand the capabilities of the basic microcontroller board quite easily by adopting these shields. And then there are some form factors that are smaller, like the Nano, the Micro, where you don't want as the big development board. And so you would just want this microcontroller in a smaller form factor. And then there's a few larger boards where you want more IOs. You know, that's one of the big differences between a microcontroller Arduino board and something like a Pi, is we got such a rich number of digital and analog IOs plus PWM. So, so the Mega is a big board and has tons of IOs. And now we've come out with exciting new boards that have RF built into the boards. Like I said, the Yoon and the Tien. The Tien has Wi-Fi as well as Bluetooth. And then the boards that we announced last year coming out, the Primo and Primo Core, those have a Nordic Semiconductor chip that does Bluetooth low energy. So the Primo Core is now the size of a quarter, and you can use it for like wearable technology. One of my colleagues is really being into that, and LEDs sewn into clothing. But also just the small size of the sensors means you could, you know, security sensors and so forth. And the Primo, we have a development board, which takes the regular shields. And then we also have the Core, which is the size of a quarter. Those boards are very exciting, and they also have Wi-Fi in them. Primo, but not the Primo Core, it's just Bluetooth low energy. And then in partnership with ST Microelectronics, we have a board called the Star Otto that has audio in and out, a camera input, and that touch screen that you see shown there, so that you can actually do touch screen command and control of a microcontroller. That's a new innovation for people, rather than having the cost of a cell phone to get touchscreen control. Now you can use this Star Otto board and have, you know, industrial controls, home controls. I think that it would be great for like a smart home interactive speaker system. You know, you can talk to various parts of the house, or maybe from a gate that's in a multi-dwelling unit. I love the fact that there's just so much innovation around it, being that the hardware is open. Now people can take this, dream up their Internet of Things problems they want to solve, and then make a product out of it. So that's why Arduino is doing so many new projects, is really expanding the capability of prototyping for IoT. And the last thing I wanted to mention was the new shields coming out that support LoRa. I don't know if you guys have heard of LoRa, long range.
No.
That's a pretty cool new radio technology. It's sub-gigahertz band and allows you to go long distances outdoors. So agricultural, industrial applications. There's monitoring of these propane tanks in the Central Valley using LoRa, where you can go for many kilometers and many miles and detect whether or not the tank needs refilling, and only send around the trucks to refill the tanks that need refilling. Whereas in the past, they had a route that went to every single propane tank, whether it needed filling or not. There are agricultural, industrial soil monitors, watering systems, all sorts of things that you can do now that are outdoors. And the cool thing about LoRa is, like cellular, it's seamless handoffs. So unlike Wi-Fi, you don't have to break a connection when you roam from one gateway to a new one, like like your phone hands off to cell tower to another cell tower. LoRa does that as well. So you can actually have asset tracking and transportation related applications with this as well. Mm. So I'm pretty excited about what Arduino is going to mean for advancing IoT globally and affordably. Like, there's no legal paperwork, NDAs, you know, open source software, open hardware. You can do whatever you want. You don't have to go ask for some company's permission and write a contract and all that kind of stuff. That's no barriers, which is what I like.
And, you know, again, I know the answers to these questions, but you're a guest. So I'm going to let you answer. what's the typical price range that you see, you know, from the Uno, the Nano on up? I mean, how much of an investment are people going to need to, if they want to get started with their Arduino?
Yeah. So the Uno is down there around $20 to $25 price point. And we have some little ones that are even cheaper, and there's Arduino compatible boards you can find even cheaper. The highest priced board we have right now is the Tien, which has, you know, a Linux Wi-Fi router stack running OpenWRT, plus the SAMD21, a 32-bit microcontroller, plus Wi-Fi, plus Bluetooth, and that's about $85 retail. So all of these boards are under $100, and you know, so range from 20 to four times that is pretty much the range of these hardware boards.
Yep. Before we get too far into this, and I've got a lot more questions, but you know, as people are now probably watching this and they're Googling for Arduino, they're probably coming up with multiple sites. They're probably seeing Arduino.org and Arduino.cc. We probably need to address that fairly early here in the interview. I mean, can you explain the difference?
Certainly. That was a little bit before my time, the rift between a couple of the co-founders, the one that was doing the hardware designs and manufacturing and others who were doing sort of the marketing and PR behind it. And they had different estimates of the value of their contributions. And it resulted in legal infighting and suing each other. And just this last year, we announced that infighting going away, but the websites are not back together again. So it just takes time and effort for that to be resolved. But now there is one legal entity that owns all of the Arduino brands and trademarks and everything like that. And so over the course of this year, you'll see that fleshed out, where we'll combine things into one website that will focus on the commercial hardware sales and stuff like that, and another that will focus on the education aspect and the open source software. And it's going to be a more of a nonprofit foundation, the Arduino Foundation. So we have a couple of websites, arduino.cc and .org. And I'm not responsible for making that decision of what becomes what. All I can say is that thankfully the Arduino branding and community is back together with the legal matters set aside, and now it just takes time to flush these things out.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably, for people that are involved in this, this is probably the biggest kind of story to come out of open hardware, certainly ever, in terms of this rift. And it's really good to hear that things are coming back together, because I think that only benefits the community, right?
Absolutely.
There were some different boards for a while. I don't know if you know what's going to happen with them. There's the Uno, Arduino Uno, and then there's the Genuino Uno. And is the hardware coming back together as well?
Yeah. So the hardware, the brand Genuino was just part of the sort of the infighting of who had the trademark in which country. So there was U.S. based and the rest of the world. So the Genuino doesn't really make sense to keep as a brand. It's everything is Arduino. So any board that said Arduino Uno or Genuino Uno was the same board, just a different brand. So that complexity, that confusion goes away. After probably they finished selling out whatever was manufactured with the Genuino brand. It still works. We don't need to carry two brands anymore.
Right.
Yeah. And then the hardware, it actually helped, you know, just expand the number of different hardware platforms. And I think there, you know, there's more coming, because it makes sense that Arduino helps abstract away the complexities of the different microcontrollers. So we've brought on, you know, ST Microelectronics and Nordic Semiconductor, Microchip bought Atmel. So, you know, Microchip's PIC32s are supported by the Arduino IDE with their chipkit boards. You've got TI that branched off, you know, a fork of Arduino with their Energia supported platform. So bringing that industry all together is really helpful for the community of innovators, because then we don't have to learn a proprietary SDK for all these different microcontrollers. We can just, you know, learn Arduino IDE. And even the Arduino IDE now is expanded. I don't know if you're aware of some of these other very successful and sophisticated software stacks that run on Arduino boards, but platformio.org. Have you guys interviewed him yet? That's a great project for a more professional IDE environment, very cross-platform. Apache Minute runs on our 32-bit microcontrollers, like the Primo Core, has an open source Bluetooth stack, you know, instead of being fixed to the Nordic soft device, which doesn't allow that much flexibility. Also, Apache Minute is an Apache Software Foundation project. And it, you know, there's a company behind it which will support more like a Red Hat model of commercial support for the distribution, so that you, if you're an IoT company, you're deploying millions of devices, you don't have to be the ones maintaining the little software stack. And then Snap for Arduino is just a killer awesome educational program that's based on Blockly, like Scratch. And even Scratch has some Arduino extensions, but Snap for Arduino, if you go to snap4arduino.org, I think it's just a super fun way to program it, because you put a little standard for Mata Sketch on the board. And then Snap for Arduino is a real-time interactive programming environment. You don't have to compile a sketch and download it to the board. You just like click a block that says set pin 10 high, and it goes, you know, LED on. And so there's just a ton of cool interactive programs that kids can write or adults can write. I like using Snap for Arduino myself, and the thing is, the debugging is right in real time. Like you click a block and it executes and it either works or it doesn't. You block analog pin 0, you click the block and it just says 174, whatever the value is. And you just stick that in a loop and there's your program. It's so easy and intuitive. And I think it'll definitely make a difference when Snap becomes, I've heard it's going to become part of the AP curriculum for computer science, AP curriculum in the U.S. And if it does, it makes programming more fun, because you interact through these low-cost Arduino boards with the real world. You're not just stuck programming something to your screen. You know, you can actually interact with the real environment.
Yeah, I know that I have a friend who's a high school teacher, and he's teaching AP computer science, and he's using Snap actually to as an intro to programming for the kids. And some of them like it, and some of them are like already beyond that. And they're like, can't we do Python or, you know, things like that. So,
Python also runs on some of these platforms now. The Apache Minute runs MicroPython. So, yeah, there's a number of languages you can use with the Arduino hardware.
And we should talk a little bit about the IDE as well. So I asked about the software or the hardware coming together. You talked about the websites coming back together. And what about the software? Because there was multiple IDEs along with everything that you just said about different ways to program an Arduino. There also is a default, or not a default, but an IDE that you can use. That's where most people start, is in the Arduino IDE. So maybe talk a little bit about what's going on with the IDE, and also maybe answer the question, will the IDE software come back together as a single entity again?
Thankfully, our Christmas present of 2016 was bringing it back together. The 1.8.0 release was bringing those things together. I think there are a few things still missing from some of the boards, But in general, both sites, CC and .org, then published the 1.8.0 that brought them all together. And 1.8.1 has already been published, which supports a few more things. So there's a trickle in of a few other shields or platforms that the libraries had to be ported to merge them back together. But basically that's being done, and that's been successful so far. Both websites are, you download the same IDE.
I noticed the other day that there was actually a cloud-based IDE now as well. That did not work with my ESP8266, which is a different platform, but you can use the IDE to program that. So what's going on with that? That's fairly new, right?
Yeah, so that's the Arduino Create. And so there's a team that's working on that specifically, and that will support any of the Arduino hardware, but it's not a cross-platform project, and it's not entirely open. So I think the build environment and so forth is open, but the web UI stuff like that is not, unfortunately. And I'm not responsible for that, but we'll see where that goes. But Create does allow you to, with specific boards, with specific libraries that are supported, you can do a web-based programming. And there was also CodeBender that was doing that as well. And now it's got a paid model. It used to be free. And then Platform.io, Ivan Kravitz is also working on some web-based support. And then Snap for Arduino also runs on Chromebooks, for example, because one of the big problems was running on Chromebooks for a lot of the educational use. So
yes,
you can run
yes.
Snap for Arduino or some of these. I guess Create doesn't run on Chromebooks yet because it needs a special plugin or extension, which doesn't exist. But CodeBender does, and Platform.io does, I think.
Cool. And we should talk a little bit about what makes this all possible. Maybe talk a little bit about the value of you were talking about the Create not being entirely open, but I believe the IDE is open, and of course the hardware is billed as open hardware. What's the value there? Without getting into too much history, can you just talk a little bit about the value of open hardware and open software?
For me, it's all about innovation. I've come from working at proprietary software in silicon vendors, and it really stifles innovation. So when I was at Qualcomm, I pushed heavily upstream Linux development, and all the Wi-Fi router chips and so forth. That was like number one, is your Wi-Fi driver has to be pushed upstream in the Linux kernel. Otherwise, you're forcing people into specific released kernel versions and proprietary binary blobs on top of that. It just holds everyone back. There was so much innovation done on top of the upstream ATH9K driver and now ATH10K to a limited degree because it has a binary blob firmware dependency. But Arduino, you're running bare metal. So you've got the software is all open, running on that stack. And sorry about that. Everyone can improve upon it and push back the enhancements. So the same thing on the hardware side. So we have a hardware design. Here's a published spec for the design. Now you need to make it into a real security, door and window sensor detection system, right? You just take a design and you expand upon it. We have partners now who are going out and taking the Arduino UNE module, a little postage stamp module. And there's this company, Gumsix, with a Gebetto online program that says, drop this module onto your own carrier board and design your own product. And you can buy these things now, for a $2,000 setup fee. That's an incredible thing for the world to be able to build these products and have all the designs of the hardware and software open for them to innovate upon.
Yeah, and one of the things that there's good things and bad things, I think, about being so open. I mean, what you mentioned is true. I mean, what's nice is you can go out and download the specs for the board or download the specs that you need to build your own your own board. Instead of using an Uno, for example, you could build this into your own PCB design and use the same. You could use the IDE to program it and all this stuff, but now you've got something that fits in your particular box or fits your environment or whatever. But it also opens up the possibility of other people designing the same boards, maybe even marketing them under the same brand, right? And selling them. I know that in my case, I'll admit, you know, at our makerspace, we're a small little nonprofit, and we have bought some of the, you know, the Chinese versions that you can get online for $3 or $4 a piece, because it was just a matter of money for us. Maybe what's your take on that aspect of it? Of, you know, people always say, oh, this is going to be open, but that always props up the ability for other people to do copycat products and so forth.
So we're okay with copying designs. We're not okay with copying the logo and putting Italy on the back when it comes from China. That's a legal no-no. So the actual copying everything of the color and the logo and everything like that is a no-no. But making your own board and under your own brand that's totally fine. That's part of that whole innovative cycle. We don't want to stifle that. So I guess since copying is hard to hold back, the best we can do is just continue to innovate. Like I see the Arduino Uno as being pretty easy to copy, but if you take the Primo, which has, you know, Bluetooth low energy, it's a little harder to copy. So I'm hoping that, you know, with the Primo is just going to overtake the Uno in terms of being the one of the main boards that's easy to buy and work with, and hopefully at a similar cost point standpoint, it'll be really useful to use because you can program it over the air, right?
Right.
With,
yeah, that's huge.
Cell phones and tablets and whatever with Bluetooth, and then having little core. So I think we just have to run ahead of the copycat crowd is how we have to deal with it.
Yeah. Good answer. I wanted to ask too about the licensing for the software and the hardware, right? Because we're talking about open hardware. We did a show on open hardware where we kind of just barely touched on the whole topic, but that's all we had time for. So how is this licensed, on the software side and on the hardware side?
So the software side, a lot of it is licensed. It's either public domain. Some of it is just, you know, especially example sketches and so forth is just public domain. Some of it's Creative Commons. The IDE and some of the underlying software is GPL. So I'd say there's a mix. I actually had a guy audit the GitHub repository because there's all sorts of extra libraries and things like that. It could be cleaner. That's one of the things that Foundation will be tasked with, is cleaning up the licensing and making sure that the contribution agreements keep everything open and usable and flexible, and sort of recommend the licenses to use when you make those contributions. But more or less, I think it's mostly GPL on the IDE, and a lot of the sketch examples are just public domain or Creative Commons. On the hardware side, I've had that question asked before, and I'm not as much of an expert on the hardware, but the hardware license is create, you know, copy and innovate and change. It's not permissive, or it's not non-permissive like the GPL, where you have to give your design changes back. You can make design changes and keep them to yourselves. Mm-hmm. And that was a question of, you know, people who innovate and make products, you know, commercial products out of it. Do they have to expose their commercial product design? No, you don't have to.
Yeah, given there's so much, flexibility in this, does there even exist a thing of governance? I mean, who decides what's in Arduino 3.0 or whatever or whatever's in these hardware boards? Is it just whoever puts up the engineering effort, contributes it to the space, and it becomes part of the Arduino umbrella? And if so, who decides that it is officially or is not officially part of the umbrella?
So on the software side, it's much more community driven, right? I mean, anybody can make a pull request and, you know, get their libraries or their software supported. On the hardware side, the hardware that's commercially produced with the Arduino logo does go through a, you know, just a business plan vetting process of like, is this board going to make money, and let's make sure it does before we actually manufacture and sell it. So there's, and part of that is also partnerships with silicon vendors. Like, we want to bring more silicon vendors into the Arduino community umbrella so that you have as a community, you have a wide variety of chipsets to select from.
And I imagine some of this is safe because, you know, the design is always open, and you can always, I'm thinking of the risk that would be there for a hardware solution to, say, incorporate, say, the touchscreen. I'm just thinking of the fact that now at my primary client, ZipRecruiter, we now have touchscreen boards by each of the conference rooms that display the current schedule, and you can touch on it and schedule a room that isn't scheduled already for a given length of time, and it integrates nicely with Google Calendar and everything else. So I don't know whether those are Arduino, but imagine that we're building that with an Arduino-based solution, and then the Arduino community decides to go left where we needed them to go right in order to keep building our solution. But I guess we could always just keep the thing is that, you know, manufacture the thing that we built our application around. So there's some safety to it because, you know, it's out there. It's not like I'm building it on a proprietary hardware platform that then goes the wrong direction for my company. Am I getting the nature of this correct?
I think the rule of thumb for getting your software supported is get there first. Just like if you have something for the Linux kernel that's somewhat abstract, but it supports your hardware, get yours in first, because otherwise if somebody else gets in there first, you have to adapt the software you may have already written to what's already the default standard, right? So so for Arduino, if you have a new board design, get the library for that type of display board, you know, get your library supported upstream, is a kernel word, but get it there first, and then you're part supported, and everyone else should adapt to your library if possible, or they can write other libraries. It's not, Arduino's not anywhere as sophisticated as the Linux kernel community, but it would be nice if we could move in that direction and have, you know, maintainers of certain types of libraries, of tone or audio libraries, of display libraries, and there are people out there who would be willing to maintain these things, but it, so far it's been loose, and that's what we need the Arduino Foundation that we're bringing on board this year to help support, is better control of over the software, better maintenance, better communication of what's coming, and really open the doors to the community to contribute, because those who contribute are the ones who, you know, have the easiest time selling or making new products based on that software.
Cool. And earlier you were talking about these boxes, these devices that are sitting on the propane tanks or the gas tanks, whatever it is, and how it was able to read it and send the data back. I'm wondering, are these devices low power enough that I can just put a solar charger on that and a battery and be able to let it run unattended? Or do I need to be running power out to all these places?
Absolutely. LoRa is long range and low power. So it can run on batteries for years, and certainly solar forever. Like if you have solar input to charge batteries, you can run indefinitely. Same with Bluetooth low energy. It's so low power that you can use solar to augment batteries if you don't ever want to change the batteries. So there's a lot of applications that are, you know, when you talk about IoT, it's really about solving kind of custom problems. And so Arduino is a really good fit because it's this tool, if you will, that you can apply to solve problems that help save money and improve efficiency. Just like I say, you know, instead of driving to every single tank, you only drive the ones you need filled. There's so much efficiency to be gained by monitoring what's going on in the environment and then taking actions based on that knowledge. And so the Internet of Things is really gathering all that data. And that's where the cloud platforms providers get excited, because all that big data goes into the cloud to be processed to make decisions, business decisions, operations decisions that will save those companies time and money. And that's really the efficiency we're looking for. And so it's kind of fun to be in this space.
And are there projects to bring more data? Speaking of Internet of Things, there's also the Internet of Things, or the Internet of Things of Internet. Let's do something like that. But, you know, as developing countries want to roll out more access to the Internet of Reality, are there Arduino projects in works or already deployed that help create more mesh networks for a community or a region?
Yeah, so Arduino is not there. You can use any radio technology. So there's XB, you know, so Zigbee, and there's shields for other radio technologies. And I fully see that 802.15.4 is going to allow some of these low power mesh channel communications. We already have Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, and now LoRa. And the nice thing is, as long as you satisfy regulatory in the country of wherever it is, then yeah, the problems you're solving in rural Africa are quite different than the problems you're solving in urban New York City or something. And yet there are industrial, smart city, environmental, energy problems that Arduino is really well suited for everywhere. And so, yeah, you don't have to go far to find these solutions. Just like Aaron says, he uses it a lot, right? You talk to some really good freelance developers and they're grabbing an Arduino and grabbing a radio and deploying solutions, whether they're art or industrial or business oriented. And because it's open hardware and software, you don't find out about them unless somebody posts about them. That's why you have to go to all these websites where people post their, you know, their smart beer fridge and all the kind of fun applications that are out there. There's equally a huge number of, you know, real world commercial deployments that take advantage of Arduino as well.
I want to get to a couple of questions from the chat room because we always try to do that. Okay. And so I want to make sure we get to these before we get too far in here. So Jay Bennett on the chat. Jay Bennett, who's Jay Bennett? He's actually one of the co-hosts here. He's in the chat room and he says, are there any boards or plan for any boards that would support FPGA in combination with Arduino?
Yes. I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about this, but a really cool technology that's coming that opens the openness of Arduino even further is we've got open hardware boards. We've got open software. What about the chip? What about the openness of the chip? So I think a place we'd like to go is looking at RISC-V, which is an open source silicon design. And wouldn't it be fun if you had a chip, you know, that's running the RISC-V architecture, a silicon, you know, taped out chip, and an FPGA version? Then you can learn, okay, this is the design of this chip. Here it is, manifested in an FPGA form. And now you allow students to innovate on the design of the chip by playing with the FPGA version.
Wow.
So look for that to come.
So cool.
The reason I say that is because
yeah, a lot of times these boards, it's the microprocessor itself that is the black hole that you don't know anything about. Even on Raspberry Pi, Broadcom has opened up some of the things around their chip, but you don't know the ins and outs of it. Same with the ESP8266, which I mentioned before. And so, yeah, having an open source or open hardware chip inside make it the whole thing open, that would be huge. Because there's always, you run into this problem as a maker where you want to tap into some functionality and you just don't know how to make it work. And people have to reverse engineer things and work around it. So as you can tell, I just got really excited about this possibility. Speaking of, I want to go back to the open source aspect of this, or something that I think comes out of the open source aspect, something that I enjoy with the Arduino IDE especially, is the availability of libraries, the examples, the ability to add new board designs so that you can do things like use Arduino IDE with a different type of board. Can you talk a little bit about that, the whole ecosystem around the IDE?
Yeah, I think so certainly there's the library manager, the boards manager, so that third parties can get their board supported and so forth. I've heard, you know, that will continue for a while. And at the same time, we're now seeing overlap with projects like Platform.io that make cross-platform development even easier or more seamless, but it's a little more professional. So somehow we have to marry the concept of making sure we're cross-platform and make it easy to bring on new hardware so that you can design your own board and get the board manager support for it done easily, or your board has a new technical capability, you have a new library that you need to do. I guess I'm still looking for, I hate to put this out there and it's not available yet, but the Arduino Foundation to help bring those things together and make it easier for developers to add support for new technology that's coming to market.
Mm-hmm. But there is a plethora of libraries, at least, that exist today, apart from the boards.
Oh, yeah.
Especially the libraries. I mean, this is something that we haven't really touched on, but should be communicated to anyone that's new to this, is that there are thousands and thousands of modules out there, right, for Arduino hardware modules that you know, read the temperature or barometer or accelerometers or, you know, kind of anything you want to do. There's all of these different hardware modules, and there's inevitably a library for almost every one of them that come with examples. And I think that's a testament to the power of open source software. Do you agree?
Oh yeah, absolutely. The number of libraries is tremendous, and the amount of effort that's gone into them, incredible. I mean, you pick up these LED like NeoPixels and stuff like that, and the examples that you can run for cool tests, it's really fun. It makes getting started so easy for the user. So the number of libraries and the sophistication of the libraries is huge. Like I said, the only thing I would say is, as a user, the frustration I've sometimes had is that dealing with the library when you've got this strand of LEDs versus that one and they're a little different, and then you have to grab another mm-hmm. library. It's not super intuitive. We could do that better. I would like to see you select the board and you select the extra sensors or components or LEDs or whatever, and it could automatically suck in those libraries for you and compile that as needed. It figures it out. That's something mm-hmm. Platform.io does really well. So we mm-hmm. could do that better.
So speaking of that, this might be a good segue. Speaking of the examples and learning about programming and all that, excuse me. I know that you're one of the goals here is to do a lot more with, I think, education, maker education. Can you explain what's going on with that effort?
Yeah, so already globally, there's so much excellent education and curriculum around the use of Arduino. You know, you meet people at the maker fairs and maker spaces, and they're doing excellent jobs with camps and schools and educators. There's so much great stuff. So the question is, how do we allow sharing of that great stuff even better? Just like we allow sharing of the software source code, can we allow sharing of the curriculum and the educational materials? So I've started working with one guy who's wanted to write a book on Arduino, and I said, okay, rather than a big book that's a little daunting, let's make little booklets. So what we're coming out with this year is little booklet kits that can help people dive into the education and help bring on more teachers, because some teachers aren't going to create their own curriculum and maybe have more difficulty figuring out what to teach. And this way we'll have stuff that you can just take a little booklet, you can get started easy, and a little kit with the hardware and all the components and the sensors and the controls, LEDs, resistors, everything you need. Kind of like the starter kit idea, because the starter kit's been hugely successful. But expand that now into starter kits that can be for IoT or for fashion wearables or for agriculture or for and even for a lot of just school subjects like physics and chemistry and math, why not have more interactive project-based learning? It makes those subjects more interesting for the majority of the students.
It's going to be interesting seeing in the upcoming years with possibly dialing back the amount of STEM education money where they're going to go. But things like Arduino are nice because they're relatively cheap. They can be funded much cheaper than, say, buying a laptop for everybody to do complex programming. We can work with shared laptops and design things that way. We're almost out of time, and I hate this because it's like now I've got like six other questions I want to ask, but I don't really have time to ask them all. I know Aaron's got probably 15 questions he wants to ask, but is there anything we haven't covered yet that you want to make sure our audience is aware of? And in particular, who are you still looking for in terms of getting to participate? I know thousands of people are participating in this around the world, but are you still missing critical people that you'd like to encourage from our audience to join in because of?
Well, I would say everyone should look to their local communities and schools, their makerspaces and their schools, and say, you know, are our kids being given these tools and this software? Because you want kids are born tech savvy today with the gadgets that they're given, right? So yes. Why not get in there and learn how these things work? So I would say just to the entire world, if you're just a consumer and you just have a gadget and you just use it, that's okay. But try to get your kids involved in understanding how these things work. How does that robot work? How does that light sensor and this touch, you know, how do these things work? And then learn to code them, because it doesn't matter what your passion is, whether you're a fashion designer or, you know, a biologist or whatever. Being tech savvy is important and will get you further and better, and you'll just be able to contribute to society better if you understand these things. So get out there and teach.
I think that's a great call to action. I think we're going to wrap up with that. Of course, my audience will yell at me if I don't ask you these two questions. I don't think you're much – is your background programming, or are you more management, or are those opposed?
My educational background is as a EE, so that's my excuse for not being an excellent software developer. I could be better, but I'm really good at copying. That's why I like Arduino. It's like there's so many examples. I'm a good programmer when I can see examples and copy. So I like to dabble in the programming and have fun and play and get my hands dirty, but I also just. If you can see by my age, I have enough experience to help handle the oversee some of the business side and marketing and operations and things like that.
I'll skip the two questions then, but it's been really wonderful chatting, and I know we could have chatted for another hour or so easily. Maybe we'll bring you back on in a couple of years and see where it's gone from there. But we really want to thank you for coming on and talking to us about the Arduino project and getting people excited about that. And I really appreciate your call to action right there at the end of the show.
Thank you, guys. I love working with smart people and this community and you guys in general. Everybody involved in open source is right there.
Awesome. That's why we do this show. So thank you, Kathy Giori, I said it wrong already. No. Okay, Kathy Giori, for coming on the show and talking to us about that. So, Aaron, what'd you think?
Well, do you really have to ask what I think?
I know this one's easy. Yes,
this is my bread and butter here. But yeah, this is. I think I love what she said at the end. I mean, we do these classes, like I said at the beginning, around Arduino, because it's kind of a gateway drug, I think, to making. Everybody wants to make an LED blink, and you know, one of the easiest ways to do that is just to hook up an Arduino and get in the IDE and run the blink example. You don't even have to know any code, really. You can just you can just run the example and the light blinks and you're like, okay, how did that happen? And then you get in and you start looking at the code and you're like, oh, so if I change this timer, it'll blink faster, it'll blink slower, or whatever. And so, I mean, it's just such a wonderful platform for people that are beginners to making and to learn both programming and hardware on, you know, and if people are looking for, you know, examples, you know, certainly you can look at a lot of the projects that I've done. I mean, I've got a similar platform to Arduino running my garage door now. My garage door is online. I've This Week in Google, I've demoed several things like the 20-sided die that when you roll it, It's 3D printed 20-sided die, and when you roll it, it tells you what number it landed on. Wow. And that was taken from Adafruit. I borrowed that from Adafruit and changed some things around. And we also have Arduinos, like was mentioned. We have Arduinos running our CNC machines. We have Arduinos running our 3D printers. So if you just go out to Instructables and just do a search for Arduino, you'll come up with thousands and thousands of project ideas if you're looking for one after watching this show.
And so what Kathy's call to action at the end there, find a local makerspace and stuff. Are there registrations for that? Is there some way that I, as a parent, could look for a local makerspace in my community?
Yeah, it's as close as a Google search. Just search, you know, your town and makerspace, and you'll find it. If you look for Benicia makerspace, you'll find our makerspace online. And there are also classes. A lot of times there'll be classes at a local. We do classes at libraries a lot of times, just to try to reach out to the community. So even if there isn't a makerspace in your area, you can definitely check the local library, check other resources around. And if you're, if you live someplace where you don't have those kind of resources locally, there are such a wealth of great tutorials and things that you can find online. It should be very, very simple to pick up and start using. And if you have any problems, just start asking questions. The community is very open and friendly.
Great, great. Cool. Appreciate all that. Appreciate your precision on your questions. I'm glad you were able to join in today. That was really nice. But we have some upcoming guests. That's like one of the weirdest transitions I've ever done. It was great having you on, but we have some upcoming guests. In spite of the fact that you were on today, we still have upcoming guests. SQL Pro is next week. That's going to be a fast, easy-to-use Mac database management application for working with MySQL. That should be sort of fun and interesting. Just added to the list within the last 36 hours, I think, something like that, we've got OSCON. So we've loved to do a show every year for OSCON because it tells people what OSCON's all about. So we've got the same two or three people we had on last year are coming back. I don't have it listed on my list right here. But also just added to the list is the Free Software Foundation has a similar conference every year called Libre Planet. Libre Planet 2017 is coming up very soon. In fact, it'll only be like two or three weeks after we air this show. So that's going to be fun. But we're going to get a couple people from the Free Software Foundation to talk about their particular show, their particular conference that goes on. We also have already added to the schedule when I talked last week, but it's SIMP, which is a SIMP, all caps, which is a managed ecosystem for secure operations based on Puppet. And with all the potential breaks and everything and stuff, it's going to be amazing to have a platform that's already there that helps you protect your credit card information, your HIPAA secret information, things like that. So that's going to be fun to talk to them about that. We're still booking more. Go to twit.tv/floss, which is the homepage for the show. You can find out who we've got on the shortlist, who we are scheduling. Just watch there. If you have another suggestion that's not on that list, please, because we're always looking for new guest ideas, especially outside the range of my particular experience. And that's where I learn the most. It's always the most fun this way. Please have the project coordinator or community coordinator, if they're big enough, email me, merlin@stonehenge.com, merlin@stonehenge.com. I said that too fast all too many times. It's right there on the homepage if you want to see that. I'm still booking Q2, just opened up April moments ago, so we will be booking those in real quick. We do have a live stream. We took some questions from there. We tape at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays. And that is subject to the daylight saving time rules for the west coast of the U.S. We're live at twit.tv when that happens. You can watch us behind the scenes, see how kind of mistakes we make, and see us actually pull the show off with very few hiccups sometimes. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google+, and also at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter. And my primary source of information is on Google+, Randall L. Schwartz. I'm going to be at Scale in a mere 2 weeks, I think it is, 2 or 3 weeks, March 1st-ish, somewhere in there. And I'm going to be at YAPSE, the Pearl Conference out on the East Coast. I'm going to be at OSCON in Austin. Then and hopefully at DragonCon and FizzLA, working on those right now, trying to get placement on both of those to be able to be a speaker. Anything you want to plug? I bet you're going to plug Benicia Makerspace, right?
Not only Benicia Makerspace, but also Benicia Mini Maker Fair, which is coming up on April 2nd. So if you're in the Northern California area, you're a hobbyist, maybe you work on something like putting your garage on the internet. garage door on the internet, go ahead and fill out an application and come join us at Venetian Mini Maker Fair, or just come as an attendee. It's a really great event. It's a much smaller fair than the big one down in San Mateo or New York, or, you know, they're all over the place now. But it's a kind of a small event, only a few thousand people. And so you really get a chance to talk to people and ask them questions and things like that. So I highly recommend that. Also, check out my book when it's available. You can pre-order it now on Amazon. It's called Linux for Makers. And I do have a little chapter in there. It's mostly about Raspberry Pi because it's talking about Linux, but I do have a couple paragraphs at least in there that describe the difference between Raspberry Pi and Arduino as I see it. So that's germane to this discussion today, but definitely check that out. It should be available in bookstores in May. Is what I'm being told. It got pushed out a little bit. But go pre-order it now so that it'll arrive on your doorstep as soon as it comes out.
Wonderful, wonderful. And in spite of you being the co-host for this show, we pulled it off again.
But.
Yeah, but. Apparently they let anybody do this show. But we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.